What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 71 of Value Town. I'm Chan Man V, and we got Raynad and the winner of DreamHack, Austin Shockey, here today joining us. What's up, fellas?
Not much. It's been an insane week in esports, man.
It has, man.
I'll talk about it next week, but yeah.
Next week. Okay. Lots of stuff going on this week, then?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Chalky, how about you, man? Are you sporting that trophy right next to your bed there?
Yeah, it's just right next to me over here. Feels good.
Did you sleep with it the first night, sir? Be honest.
I did not. You know, it's on the bedside table in the hotel, and then getting it home was easier than I thought it would be.
But, okay. Yeah, I didn't get stopped for it being potentially a weapon.
they like had to check it at security, but yeah, nothing too big.
Okay. Well, that's good. So guys, we're going to be talking about DreamHack Austin, of course. Just lots of different stuff going on in the meta and just with the different decks at the tournament. It was really the first big tournament that we've seen since the release of the new expansion and with Standard. So it'd be great to talk to these guys about it. We'll look specifically at the decks that Chalky was playing and then just some notable cards. Of course, we had some drama at the end of all this stuff too, which is kind of unfortunate because I really wanted to focus, you know, just on Chalky finally getting his win here. But lots of stuff that popped up in the last day or two, kind of surrounding Terrence, and I figured it's something important enough that we should talk about on the show too. And then we'll end with some Q&A. Just if you guys have any questions, definitely tweet those to ValueTownGG, and I'll try to get to them just at the end of the show. Okay, so DreamHack Austin, all three of us were there. Oh, by the way, guys, Noxious is casting Starlighter right now. So everybody asking like where Noxious is, he's unfortunately he's got a job right now, and he can't make it this week. So he'll be back next week. Okay, DreamHack Austin, guys. So all three of us were there, and the two of you guys participated. Ray had an abbreviated, I guess, run in the tournament just because of, I guess, rules or whatnot. I don't know if you wanted to touch on that at all, Ray, just because I know some people probably ask about it. But you did, I guess, quit the tournament a little bit earlier. And you want to talk a little bit about that?
I think he's muted.
Oh, I think you're muted, buddy.
Yeah.
Good call. Yeah, I mean, it's like at the end of the day, it's nobody's fault. It's not DreamHack's fault or anything. They had this clear-cut set of rules where they wanted everyone to bring a laptop that had an Ethernet port so you could like directly plug into the internet because the Wi-Fi is unstable. And I didn't, like, the laptop I have is one of those like really skinny, like convertible ones. So it's very like thin. It's basically a tablet with a keyboard attached. So it doesn't have a port. So I didn't want to buy a second laptop just for this tournament, and I didn't really want to like beg people to borrow one. So I just said, screw it. I took my cell phone, which, because, you know, the mobile data wasn't affected by there being a million people in the building like the Wi-Fi was. So I figured it'd be more stable. Mm-hmm. So I was basically just using my phone, and I would hotspot to play on an iPad that I borrowed from Lothar because the iPad was like, there's some mobile glitches that don't let you use your hero power and stuff sometimes. So that's the reason I wasn't just playing on my phone, But yeah, so I was playing on the iPad. I had no problems for the first round. Randomly gave me his laptop. So I was laptop. And the second round was a feature match, so I was playing on a PC.
Yeah.
So I guess the third round was the first time I used that actual setup that I was planning on using. Anyway, I played against Ant, and we played the first game, and we were both playing Zoo. And he goes first. He has like 8-1 drops and a Direwolf, so he wins, like pretty standard Zoo game.
Right.
And then game two, I switched to Control Paladin, and he has Zoo because it's last hero standing. And we play, and I stabilize. I have the board. I have like Harrison Jones on 1 health, and I'm making 2-1-1. I have like Harrison Jones, a few Paladin soldiers, and I have like, you know, Justicar hero power going. I have Ragnaros in hand.
Sounds like a good spot to be in.
Right. Yeah. I'm at 14 life. He has no board. I'm in a good spot. And like, the turn passes back to him, and he plays a Void Caller. He life taps. His hand is empty. So he has two cards. Plays Void Caller, and then plays some other card that just gets frozen midair. It's like suspended, and you know, my connection cuts out basically, and I couldn't like reconnect no matter what I did. Hearthstone was just frozen. So I just tilted off the face of the earth, because the ruling there is I get the loss, even though it's not like I lost a game at the beginning of a game when we don't know who's going to win. It's not like I lost it in a game that I was going to lose anyway. Right. Like I lost a game that I had won against a deck that I countered, like and it wins against my counter because I disconnect. So I tilted pretty hard, and it didn't really affect my play. The last match we played was I had Aggro Shaman, but that's a game that never should have happened. And Aggro Shaman obviously loses to Zoo pretty hard. So, yeah. So that was it. So I lost there. And I basically went up to the admin desk. I said, I'm just going to drop. Then they started, like, typing shit in. And I explained the whole Wi-Fi situation. I thought about it for a while. And I realized, you know, the tournament's triple elimination. Like, I probably shouldn't just concede that fast. So I figured, fuck it. I'll play one more game. And played against Kranich. Mm-hmm. Again, player I should not have played against, because I, like, right. Fucking, like, you know, like, it's just, you see how, like, snowballs out of control. But I'm up 2-0, and he reverse sweeps with Control Paladin, which is pretty gross, but that's a bad beat story. It's not worth telling. It's basically, like 7 turns in a row, he had a 2-card combo that answered my, like, concealed auctioneers and stuff.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty disgusting. Yeah. So anyway, at least the Kranich, it's like fine, whatever. It's like, yeah, it's a very bad beat, but it's also standard Hearthstone. I'm not going to bitch about that. Like, I'm not mad that I lost him. I'm mad that match happened in the first place.
Right.
Because I was playing well. My lineup was good. I felt like I was favored in every single lineup I went against. Like, I was in a good spot.
What'd you run against?
So I had a second. I can control Paladin, but it was like a list that punishes Zoo. Mm-hmm. And I had, Miracle Rogue, Aggro Shaman, and
it wasn't Priest. I know that.
Oh, that's gonna bug me now.
Warrior?
Yeah, probably Warrior, right?
That was like the most popular thing.
I said all of them. Aggro Shaman, Zoo, Paladin, Rogue.
Yeah. Okay, that's 4. Yeah. Okay, so, great. So DreamHack is one of the few Swiss tournaments that we have, like, throughout the year. How'd you think, besides that requirement for that laptop, how'd you think everything went? Just, I guess,
shocking. It was really well run. They had a good rule set. They really worked hard on it. They flew in the admins from Sweden, which was, like, great. Like, that's an expense they didn't need to do, right? They could have just had North American people do it that, like, didn't have experience. So, props to them. It was really well run. Shout out to Robert and Amanda for running a good tournament, and all the other team that I didn't get to meet. But yeah, they did good.
Chucky, how about you? How'd you feel about just generally the whole how it was run in the Swiss? We'll get into good stuff in a second, but
I think DreamHack's running some of the best tournaments. The fact that they're doing Swiss, and like Raynette said, the admin team's just really good. I haven't had problems with them, and when there are problems, like, they solve them pretty quickly. I mean, I've had, like, disconnects at 2 DreamHack tournaments so far, but it gets addressed pretty easily. There's no, like, issues. And the fact that they also let us use, like, pen and paper, they gave public deck lists for top 16, I feel like that stuff, like, really helped me play really well and hopefully raised the overall level of the tournament. Whereas, like, Blizzard isn't doing that. They're doing public deck lists now, but still no pen and paper, which I don't like.
Yeah, the pen and paper is definitely something that, I don't know. Like, Ray, actually, what do you feel about pen and paper? Do you think you should have to rely on memory, and that should be something that's an aspect of all these events?
Pen and paper? Some people use it. It's like, how do I put it? In Magic, it's standard. Like, you have to do it because there's so many effects that show your opponent's hand.
Right.
And you want to write down, like, all 7 cards that... So you, like, know as they play them, like, you'll know most of their hand and stuff. But also little things like you manually track life total and all of that. In other card games, it's standard to use pen and paper. In Hearthstone, you can use it. It's like, it can be relevant if you're playing a very slow control mirror, or you can just, like, know for sure if they used, like, 2 true silvers or something. Mm-hmm. If it goes to fatigue. But in general, it's, like, not a a big deal. Like, my memory is pretty good. I feel like it's rarely applicable. And in my personal opinion, the energy and like the mental effort you're putting into writing down all the cards, like it distracts you more than it, like what you're losing by being distracted into doing the writing and stuff is more than the benefit from writing stuff down. For me personally, but to each their own. Some people feel smart or like they feel more comfortable doing it.
Right. Okay. I mean, as a spectator, it was, you know, I've never been to any of the other DreamHacks in Europe that, you know, where the Swiss tournament was run with all you guys. So it was great actually seeing you guys all matched up. And I mean, almost every single round, there were some very notable people matched up against each other. And of course, you know, none of us want to bother you guys. We're not even allowed to like say anything in that area. But it's really cool getting a chance to see you guys really intense and focused versus how you guys are in stream, right? Like, we all just see you guys having fun and relaxed and shit normally. So it was really cool. And a good number of the notable names got pretty far too, like to top 16, I think, like 8 people, I think, 8 streamers / play, you know, professional players that we all know. But this tournament had a lot of first timers, or at least some names that we didn't recognize go pretty far. And, some of those, obviously being like Terrence and, I think we saw Jay Billy as well as, who's the other semifinal, Peyton too, right? In the semifinals, as well as a bunch of others in the quarterfinals. So it was a really great opportunity for a lot of these guys and some of the even smaller teams, which is really cool. Okay, so why don't we jump into Chalky, like this is your big win, right? Like, after how many seconds have you had actually leading up to this now? I know you're counting them too. So
I think I have like 5 second places, but a lot of them are in like shitty online tournaments.
Yeah.
But like the fact that I've made like top 4 at DreamHack, top 8 at Americas twice, and all that, like I've just gotten close and never gotten it.
Yeah. And I know even recently you were talking about just taking a break, right, from all of this. You mentioned that even in your post interview there. How, I guess, gratifying is, I mean, how much does this do for your confidence in just like keeping you at it for a while? I mean, are you still thinking about maybe taking a break even after this win?
Oh, no. I mean, I think like right after the 0-2 at the America's Regionals, I mean, it's always really tough like to just absolutely lose, especially when like you don't think you really did anything wrong.
Yeah.
And especially when at the end of the day, it's still like it was a top 8 placement, but you get so much shit from like the community and people like treat it as if you like failed, when in reality, I made like $5,000 off that, which is very well above expectations. So, I mean, it's just like something you have to get over as a competitor. And after losing, you know, over and over and having people like say shit, you definitely, it gets to you. And winning definitely helps like have more confidence in yourself.
Right. I mean, this is the byproduct of not having any kind of ranking system, because you finish top 8, top 4 in tournaments. That's actually great, like you were just saying. And if you do it consistently, it should be, you know, lauded, right? Like, but in our community, it's either win or nothing. And even when you win, sometimes it's very short-lived, and that's something that bothers the shit out of me. Hate that. Okay, well, why don't we jump into some of the decks that you use? Because I thought that the lineup that you used was pretty cool. Like, you had Paladin, you had Priest of all things, right? We actually had a few people running Priest, which really surprised myself and a lot of other people. And then Warrior, and then of course Warlock. But why don't we start with the Paladin? So I'm showing the Paladin deck on the screen right now, and why don't you describe it a little bit, and then maybe we can, you know, just maybe jump in with any kind of interesting cards to discuss.
Yeah, so initially with Standard, I thought Paladin was going to be pretty bad, but I don't know, I talked a bit with like some people and also just kind of like the developers of Hearthstone, and you know, they said they thought Paladin was still okay. So the big thing we did at first was we took the shell from Murloc Paladin with like the Solemn Vigils, the card draw, the Doomsayers, because now there's no Minibot, there's no Muster, so you have to get through early game somehow. Doomsayer's an insane card at doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of cut some card draw as it went on, made it really greedy and really control heavy. And this deck was a deck I spent a lot of testing on, and it was doing really well. So I centered my lineup around this deck.
Okay, awesome. Like, when you say centered around it, does that mean automatically mean that you don't start with this deck?
So in Last Hero Standing, you actually sort of have to like pick a way to build your lineup. So you start with a ban in mind. Right. Like, I wanted to ban Rogue because it's the worst matchup for this deck. besides like really edge cases like Priest, which I didn't feel a lot of people would have. So when you ban Rogue, you can then bring decks that are like weak to Rogue because it's going to be out of the question. And you, with Last Hero Standing, the main thing I did was I just made sure my lineup had multiple checks to each deck. So like if I was going to play Freeze Mage and they ban Warrior, I needed to have another deck that could beat it, which was this deck, and so on.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely, it's cool just to hear about the strategy involved with just bringing your lineup. Format obviously plays a big part in it. Ray, you actually brought a Control Paladin too. What are some of the differences that you see with yours and this one?
So my deck was completely different, but that's because my ban strategy is different. So I was banning Shaman, so I could bring decks that are like weak to Shaman, and my lineup was more centered around Rogue. So because of that, my Paladin deck, because I still thought it was a reasonable deck to bring, I kind of skewed it to be a little bit better against Rogue. Not favored, I would say, but close to 50-50. So I had things like Harrison Jones. I had double Rallying Blade. Is that what it's called? The Eagle Horn Bow?
The 3-2.
It's like double Keeper because I had the two Rallying Blades. I had all of the Humility Kodo Aedric thing at first, and then I basically cut all the Humility stuff, replaced it with like things that could kill 4/4s and 3/3s, and Harrison. Still had both Ragnaroses because old Rag is good against Rogue. So it was just kind of more of that strategy. It was also Corrupted Healbot, Infested Tauren type of plan. So
yeah, that's one thing I noticed too here, Chucky, is that unlike some of the Nazoth decks we've seen just to date, whether it's on ladder, just Reddit everywhere, we don't see many Death Rattles in this. We literally see, I think, the four.
There's just three.
Or is it three? Yeah, it's only three, actually. Yeah. So I guess talk to us a little bit about that. I mean, is Nazoth really that much of a finisher if you only have those three?
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty happy just Nazothing one card. I would compare it mostly to like Anything Can Happen. So you don't need to play all the Murlocs for that card to be really good. You just play the most impactful ones. It's a little different because they still ran five Murlocs, but basically the other Death Rattles, like on their own, aren't very powerful. And I just made the deck to survive through the early game, get to the late game, Nazoth the really impactful stuff, rather than trying to Nazoth the huge board, because usually they're going to clear it anyway. Like, every control deck actually has a way to clear Nazoth, regardless of what Death Rattles you use. So I didn't focus as much on the Nazoth as I did the kind of external win conditions. Like, I added Justicar, I added Eadric to kind of help stabilize the board. So yeah, it's just much more of a control paladin with Nazoth as kind of an X factor finisher if you need it.
Right. Yeah, the Justicar seemed to be a super huge, definitely a super huge factor in this deck, which actually when I was running this deck, I had totally forgotten about Justicar. So that was really enlightening. I definitely added it immediately the next day. Again, it's been wonderful since. So Spellbreaker. Silence in this deck too. We didn't see a ton of silence, so why don't you explain that? Is there a problematic card that you were trying to counter with that?
So this deck is basically my second check to Freeze Mage, which silence is really good against for Doomsayer, for silencing a freeze target, stuff like that. If you're not against Freeze Mage, it's basically going to hit like Tyrion or Sylvanas a lot of the time, but there's just a lot of decent applications for it. You can deny card draw. You can kill Doomsayers with it, which sometimes you can't. Like, maybe you don't have the Kodo. Maybe you need to save the Kodo. It's just, like, kind of a generic, decent tech card that I felt was better than Keeper Voldemon. Like, it sort of serves the same purpose, but since I have the Humility package, the Kodos, I can deal with stuff that normally people use Keeper Voldemon to deal with. And Spellbreaker, I just felt had more applications.
Okay. Yeah, Ray, are you running Spellbreaker a lot?
Nope. I didn't play any silence in my decks. It's a fine card, though.
Okay. Man, one thing about this deck, too, is that your Rag in this deck hit a lot of good things this weekend.
Lots of
Concealed Auctioneers, and it's like old times again, man.
Yeah, I hit two really important Rag 50-50s, one with Light Lord, one with Fire Lord, in the tournament. And, I mean, you know, it feels good to look back at a tournament and finally say, you know, the play was there, the decks are there, and I hit a couple 50-50s that I needed to. Normally it's the other way around. So, you know, everything is kind of the perfect storm this weekend.
Well, you got to be lucky too, man, to win these tournaments. It's Hearthstone after all, right? But yeah, that was definitely cool. It's just exciting getting a chance to see Rag again. It's even just from a casting standpoint. Too much of it, I know, can be too, you know, can be a bad thing. But every once in a while, just having that kind of excitement is fun. Okay, any last comments, Ray? Maybe any questions for him on these decks or this Paladin deck or no?
No, it looks solid.
Yeah,
pretty standard. Yeah.
Oh, I love Kodo too. I'm so glad Kodo's back too. By the way. Okay, so Warrior. Okay, so this one was actually surprising because this is, I would say, just a very, I wouldn't say generic, but it's Control Warrior. It's kind of what we've always thought of Control Warrior was. It has Elise, obviously, in it too, so it's just only that flavor. But the most recent, I guess, trends in meta has been more of a Tempo Warrior. And even some patron too. So whenever you know I saw this, I was just like, oh wow, he's actually playing just a straight up control wear. So why don't you talk a little bit about why you were so successful with this?
It kind of just goes along with what I was talking about in last year of standing. You don't necessarily want to just take the straight up best decks. You want to take kind of different counters to things. So this list was really good against what I needed to be good against. The Doomsayers were kind of the tech that a lot of people didn't have, and I feel like if you play Doomsayers correctly, it's one of the most powerful cards in the game right now, so like if you can find the right time to do it, it can gain you so much tempo, a lot of time to just get a lot of life. You can deny really important turns from people. The rest of the deck's kind of standard. I mean, it's pretty threat light, but I was still able to kind of win mirror matches. Just need to kind of know how to play it out, what to do with your cards, and yeah, it's definitely nothing too out there, but just good old Control Warrior.
Yeah, I would say you won the majority of the mirror matchups that I saw. I mean, even some like Control, I mean, you could tell you practiced the deck a lot too, because there are a few mirror matchups with Control Warriors that you, I think you played pretty flawlessly. One in particular, I think in, was it against Jasm or?
Yeah, it was against Jasm. And I mean, I think that basically he threw out his Sylvanas and I guess he had like 9 uncastable cards.
Yeah, but it was crazy.
At that point, you kind of just have to realize that you're supposed to pass. You can never throw out Sylvanas in the mirror or else they just give you an Acolyte and you lose. So I'd learned a lot. You know, I had to lose a lot of Control Warrior mirrors in the past in tournaments to get to the point where now I know how to play it out.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. Chagi ended up giving him an Acolyte, so he ended up drawing like another 1 or 2 cards. But yeah, so how much did Elise play a factor in your matches?
I mean, I casted Golden Monkey in the Warrior mirror. You just need it in some matchups. Like, it's not something I like to have in my decks. And it's like, it was such a like fun card for the community to see at first, but now it's like, it definitely skews control matchups to a way where sometimes it falls to RNG, but if you play well, I mean, it's still, your monkeys don't matter as much. And like, there was no match that I played where the monkey outcome decided everything. Like, my opponent's got some pretty crazy monkeys, but because I was able to put myself in a spot where it didn't really matter. Like, I guess Peyton got like 2 Renos against me, which is in fatigue, crazy. He got like 2 Tyrians. I mean, yeah. I mean, at least it's just something you need for control mirrors.
Right. Okay. Ray, see anything that's worth?
No, I like this deck a lot. It's a really good list. I will say, like, most of the time, like, we're used to seeing Conquest tournaments for a long time, and I think that most decks people see in Conquest, it's safe to take those decks and try them on ladder. But for Last Hero Standing, you're almost always building your deck in a way that just ignores one really important deck in the metagame. So don't just take decks from Last Hero Standing tournaments and expect them to always perform well on ladder. And this deck, actually, I think, would be pretty reasonable on ladder, but that Paladin deck would get absolutely bodied. So you have to keep in mind, like, just that. But I like this deck a lot. I actually wouldn't change a card, probably. I'm not sure if you need Acolyte, but you probably do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't change a card.
All right, cool. Let's move on to the Priest. And, okay, so this is what I was excited about. I was like, oh, man, Chalky's bringing Priest, yes. And not only that, he's actually doing well with Priest. This is even amazing. Because I just play a ton of Priest. Okay, so I guess starting, this is an Elise deck, too. You always have that kind of as a late game out, you know, if you ever get into some crazy control matchup. But this is a Nazoth design, and I guess talk a little bit about just the Museum Curators versus, you know, maybe just adding straight, like, Healbots and other Death Rattle cards instead.
So this deck's just really, really, really good against control. And I played against my friend Flo in round 3, and he had the same lineup as me, except he had a Rogue over Zoo. And so I had to ban his Rogue, and he banned my Priest, and then he 3-0'd me with Priest. And to give an idea of, like, why Curator and stuff is in the deck, like, I mirror match, or it wasn't a mirror match, but I played him with, like, Control Warrior. And he got, like, the new Deathwing, a Cairn, and then he resurrected those, and then he got, like, 7 Shifting Shades off. It's just disgustingly, like, the amount of external cards you get with the double Shifting Shade, the double Curator, the Nazoth, 2 Entombs, like, you basically, in control mirrors, you're playing, like, a 40-card versus a 25-card deck, and it's pretty hard to lose those matchups, so Priest was very specific for beating certain things. This is a deck that I'd be kind of shaky taking on the ladder. You'd probably want to change some things to be a little more anti-meta, and you're going to get crushed by Rogue no matter what. This deck performed really well for everyone else. I didn't get to play it much. It actually got banned a few times against me, and usually it was just a deck that in my last year lineup went 1-1. Like, it came in to counter something, countered it, and then got beaten by, like, Freeze Mage. And then I'd bring in, like, Warrior or Paladin to beat Freeze Mage. So, yeah, it was very much for the last year standing meta.
Okay, so basically a counter deck. Cool. So no Forbidden Shaping in this. You know, that's definitely one thing I noticed, too. Not like the card doesn't really apply here.
It's a card that, like, I haven't played with it, but it'd have to be really, really good on average for you to play it, because it's not a card that you can realistically play and know what's going to happen. The only time it's really good is if you have the tempo, which this deck very rarely does, and you can slam, like, a 6-drop with it or a 7-drop.
Right. I usually do 8-drops just because there's very, yeah, very few bad 8-drops in this game. I should get the Boogie Monster. That's never fun. But that card, I can't really see how it would fit here either. Cool. Ray, any comments on this deck?
I think I should play 2 Doomsayers, but other than that, it seems fine. I guess I would cut Harrison. I guess Harrison's just there for the only thing it's good against.
For Shaman.
For Shaman.
It's really good against Shaman, too.
But you didn't ban Shaman, you were banning.
Yeah, I didn't ban Shaman, so kind of needed. Yeah. At least a weapon removal.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter if you overdraw against that, right? As long as you just get rid of that Doom Hammer. Okay, let's see. The last deck that you brought was the Warlock. So, Zoo Warlock. This seemed to be pretty popular in the general player pool. The only thing I'll just point out card-wise that I thought was really cool was the Crazed Alchemist. I think that's the one card that stands out versus what everybody else is running.
Yeah.
I guess talk about that.
Well, this actually, like, the list that's on screen isn't my list, but I run 1 Mortal Coil and 1 Soulfire, and then there's probably a 2 of something missing. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. I must have gotten
I think I have 2 Direwolves. Yeah, Direwolves. So I only have 1 Soulfire, 1 Coil. Those are, like, techs.
Okay.
The Crazed Alk was something I came up with, like, the night before the expansion even hit. Like, we realized Doomsayer was really, really good. Mm-hmm. And Owl's awful now, so Crazed Alk's, like, the new counter. A lot of players actually brought it. I was surprised. Like, Tiddler brought it. Ant brought it. There were at least, like, 10 players in the tournament running Crazed Alk, not only in Zoo, but other stuff. It also kills Flame Tongue Totem, Manatide Totem, and it just has, like, general application in a deck with a lot of buffs like Zoo. So yeah, it was really powerful for me. I'm not sure if it'll be a mainstay in the deck, but it did really well. And if Doomsayer is still going to be around, then yeah, it's probably going to stick around in the list.
Yeah, it seems like it does have legs. I can't, you know, Doomsayer is one of the biggest cards to counter Zoo. So, yeah, what do you think, Ray? You think Crazed Alchemist is here to stay in Zoo? You love Zoo.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's solid. I mean, a lot of people were playing it. Saiyan had it. Super JJ had it. It's definitely good. I'm not sure if, like, I don't know if they were playing one or two, but yeah, it seems like Doomsayer is one of the best neutral cards in the metagame, like by a large margin. So it I don't think it'll really ever stop being good. Just yeah, unless, you know, until the card changes happen or new cards come in.
Right.
So yeah, until then, Crazed Alchemist is definitely a solid choice.
Okay. Good deal. All right. Well, I guess that's going to be all the decks. I guess I'll maybe conclude the talk with just asking you guys, any cards that kind of surprised you or decks that surprised you during the tournament that had a lot of success? Either of you guys.
I saw a lot more Reno than I expected. Just Reno Warlock, Reno Mage variants. Like, two of my top 16 opponents had Reno Malagos Freeze Mage, which I had to ban. I didn't really come in prepared for that. I was unfavored in both of those matchups because I had to ban it. I had to ban Reno Warlock against Peyton. Like, I ran into a lot of Reno in my top 16 run. Besides that, the only other thing was Orange and Zalay top 16 with Beast Druid, which I didn't expect to do that well. We kind of actually tested that deck a bit, and it didn't quite make the cut. But I guess, you know, they had success with it, so that was the only other thing that really surprised me.
Yeah, Beast Druid is pretty awesome. I don't think did we see Beast Druid that much on stream? Maybe a couple times?
No.
Yeah, I didn't actually catch it whenever they did play it, but I knew they were playing it, which is really cool. Anything, Ray, that surprised you? You saw, or any of your opponents, or?
I guess I was surprised Rogue didn't do better. Maybe it got banned a lot. I don't know. Rogue felt like far and away the best deck to me. In tournament play, at least, even on ladder, I think. So yeah, it's like. Yeah, I guess I just expected to see, like, more sweeps with Rogue.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't think we saw that many. Definitely saw some with Shaman. Definitely saw some with Zoo, at least on stage. I don't think we saw a ton with Rogue. But Rogue's here to stay. We're going to see plenty of Rogue, like, moving forward for sure. And what's the next big tournament for you, Chucky?
Just prelims. Not this weekend, but the next, on the 20th.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot more Rogue in Conquest, like a lot more Shaman, because Conquest is a lot less about having specific counters, and it's a lot less lineup oriented overall. Like, I'm probably not going to be bringing anything similar to what I won DreamHack with. Like, it's probably going to be a much more honest, mid-rangey, like, just good deck environment rather than super greedy control decks. I think EU is going to be really weird, though, because they had a day after DreamHack to submit. And I think there's going to be a lot of players that are like, ooh, well, Control did really well at DreamHack. Right. And it's like, well, not really. Like, Conquest format is a lot different.
Exactly. I remember listening to a couple of you guys talking about just the differences between the two and how different, you know, bringing the lineups are when you have those two different formats. So that would be crazy if we saw a bunch of Control in that format. Ray, how about you? What are you planning next?
Like, what tournaments?
Yeah. You've been busy this last few weeks, so.
Yeah, I have a tournament in, like, the first week of June, and then I'm doing DreamHack Summer, so.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll see if I want to do those. I dropped out of Austin before getting eliminated. It wasn't just because of the Wi-Fi thing. It was, I noticed it was a lot of rounds. It was, like, 9 rounds, and they were each taking, like, 2 hours. So I kind of want to, like, see the event when I'm there, you know? So for DreamHack Summer, we'll see how fast it's going, but I'll probably play it out too.
Right.
Yeah, I'll give it a try. I mean, I like the metagame right now, so.
Not to mention you have a team to look after in other games too, like your
CSGO at Austin, team. All of our teams are there. Exactly. CSGO, Heroes, Smash, Hearthstone, they're all there.
They did pretty well too. Second in CSGO, and Axe did pretty well in Smash. It's good stuff. Okay. Well, why don't we... well, anyways, congratulations, Chalky, for finally winning. I mean, I know a lot of us were out there rooting for you in the crowd, and man, Adam was hooting and hollering. He was like the one guy that was literally like yelling like a sports arena, but we were definitely cheering for you, and it was great to see you finally get one, man.
Yeah, it was great to win and great to see just all the support I got from just people there. It was great to have a North American land because, yes. You know, if you go to Europe, yes. And like maybe like two people would come up to me at a European land and be like, you're Chalky, right? And so when I went to Austin, like I probably signed like almost 100 things, and it was just awesome to see the support.
Yeah, we need more of these. So hopefully this was a success, and they'll have a lot more, not just in Austin, but in the U.S. period, because outside of QuakeCon, guys, and QuakeCon is obviously mostly an FPS type of event. I mean, there's no lands in the U.S. literally none. So, especially BYOC lands. I mean, so this is huge. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to make sure I was here, because it was so cool. All right. Well, of course, every event, you know, of course, there's got to be some drama, and unfortunately, this was like a big piece of drama. And it was something, you know, while the event was going on, I actually didn't even realize was going on, because I wasn't watching it on stream. I was, you know, just watching it live, you know. And Chalky, you're probably the same too. And Ray, you too. Like, were you aware that all this Twitch chat business was going on and this racism business that was, you know, surrounding Terrence?
Twitch chat was the furthest thing from my mind while I was at the venue.
Really?
But if you asked me on site, like, Raynad, do you think the chat right now is being politically correct and supportive of our players? I would probably say no.
Probably. You'd absolutely right. Say no.
I could have deduced that one myself.
Yeah, so anyways, I don't think any of us were aware of it, but, you know, the aftermath, I think it was very, very clear. What was going on there. And just for the folks that might have missed it or haven't been reading Reddit, I guess, the last day or two. So Terrence M, who is a player from Gale Force, the team, had an awesome run. Actually, he was, you know, I was rooting for you, Chalky, but I actually was talking to folks and I was like, I think Terrence is going to win just because he has a pretty good lineup. He's just been playing solid, like, since round 16. But he had a great run. You know, I don't know him, so I just met him for the first time this week. Really great kid, really nice kid. And he's African-American. And, of course, in Hearthstone, we don't have very many African-American notable players. So you can imagine what Twitch chat was like. I went back and watched the VODs, but unfortunately with the VODs, when admins were banning people, it wasn't like banning it in real time as you're watching it, right? Like, so if they banned them at any point, it's just like messages were gone already. So I didn't really get a chance to see exactly what was going on, but I could get the gist of it, and some of them would sneak through too. So you know, lots of obviously those type of messages, racist messages that were happening in Twitch chat. So a lot of that came up, and I think the discussion that maybe that we should have is whether is this just a Twitch chat? Is this specifically just a Twitch chat, or is this does it have any specifics to the Hearthstone space? Because we don't have any very notable African Americans right now.
I'll start first off with all, you can say black, Chris. It's like African American was politically correct in the 90s or something. It's okay.
Okay. Thanks.
No right. problem. Second of all, what was the question? Is this
a general Twitch chat thing, or do you think this is specific at all to Hearthstone?
It's just a general Twitch chat thing, man. I feel like we're being part of the problem right now in like discussing it in a way. It's like, I feel like a lot of what's happening is when you use the word like racism or talk about subjects like this in general in any community, you're just going to get pressed because people are going to have opinions. They're going to find things to get worked up about. And that's kind of what all of these publications that are doing reporting on it now, you know, like, yep. Yeah, we see it on Reddit, like what right now, front page, daily dot article, 700 views. Like, you know, it's just because Carling's thing took off and now somebody else is like, oh man, racism, you know, I need something to write about today. That'll get clicks. And it's just, well, spirals out of control. Like, the community is supportive of Terrence, right? Period. Yeah. Like, nobody's saying fuck Terrence. Like, and Twitch chat is a bunch of like 12-year-olds that don't understand the meaning behind the things that they say. nobody's like legitimately, you know, I mean, maybe some people legitimately have racist thoughts, but you're not going to change people's minds in that case. Like, people are just going to say stupid, offensive shit on the internet.
Well,
it's dumb to me that it's blown out of proportion to the point where we're talking about it, I guess, because it's an issue that can't, like, it's worth talking about.
Yeah, I mean, we should absolutely talk about it. Yeah. I mean,
I'm just saying it. I don't want to, like, I don't want to help, like, start up this media frenzy.
Yes.
Because I feel like it's, if the people are talking about it because the publications are trying to get clicks and not necessarily because there's an addressable issue with solutions here.
Yeah, so the reason why I think that it's maybe, I guess, a little bit different than the normal talk about racism and sexism and things like that on Twitch chat, which happens all the time, right, is that, you know, there was an instance where, you know, Terrence had wanted his family to watch him be in the finals, right? And that came up. And, you know, these people are probably not exposed to Twitch at all and probably not realizing maybe their son or their nephew or whatever is being, you know, just in this kind of environment. And then, you know, and I think that's why it was a little bit different. And, you know, Terrence obviously explained to his parents, like, just Twitch chat is a bunch of immature people, you know, and he actually said that. But that thing, I think that's where it's a little bit interesting of a discussion, because, you know, there are a lot of people who will be, you know, coming into esports, experiencing a lot of these games, like, for the first time, and, you know, how people respond. Like, are they going to respond in a very positive way seeing this type of stuff from Twitch chat, especially for a Hearthstone tournament, which leads to maybe events needing to really, really crack down on moderation, you know, and that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, the racism thing isn't something that comes up often because, like you said, there's not many black competitors, but it does come up in, like, all the games. It's not just Hearthstone. And yeah. The other thing is, like, the whole parent thing. I mean, my parents watch my games, and it's not like Twitch chat says the nicest things to literally anyone. Like, it's always shitpost about everyone.
Yeah.
And whether it's, like, the color of your skin or whatever else.
Your size or whatever, yeah.
Right. Like, it's just, it's always going to be nasty things. And, I mean, the only thing I can think of is maybe, like, chat can be off by default and you have to turn it on. Like, if you're you're not on a Twitch account, that way, like, when parents who just want to watch or people outside of esports that don't care about the Twitch chat hive mind thing, when they pop on, like, they don't see that instantly. That's not, like, thrown in their face. Because right now it is. You know, you have to actively turn it off. It's not something that's already off and you have to choose to participate in. But, yeah, I think it is kind of, like Raynad said, being blown out of proportion, like, for journalistic purposes. I think Terrence is handling it really well. And like Raynad said, he's getting a lot of support. So I don't think it's too, you know, destructive. Like, some of the articles are saying things like, oh, this is going to be the event that's remembered for, you know, racist Twitch chat. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, we shouldn't take away from his performance or anyone's performance in the tournament. Like, the tournament was a great tournament, and chat's not going to change that.
Yeah, we shouldn't take away from your performance, actually. So that's why this is all unfortunate. And I agree with you. I think Terrence is handling it really well, and he's a really just, you know, kind of chill, soft-spoken guy, too. So, you know, having to do these interviews, you know, it's tough. It's definitely tough, like, even doing these interviews, because it puts them in a very awkward position, too, that you might not want to be in. But overall, it's really cool. And again, he's a really good player, and hopefully this helps him get some exposure, too, because that'd be really great. Definitely great for him. I guess, but that suggestion, Shockey, just having it turn off, I think is probably the best thing I've heard so far, just in terms of
if you're not on a Twitch account. If you have a Twitch account, you can have Twitch, because I know the main thing people would say is, I don't want to have to click a button every time I enter a stream.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You can have chat on by default if you have an account, but.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, so definitely Hearthstone event organizers, definitely take that into note for sure, if you can just by default have it.
I do want to bring up one thing about this, though. There's like regular Magic tournaments that happen on Twitch, too. They've been happening long before Hearthstone was ever a thing. Mm-hmm. And before Hearthstone was even a game, there was like a tournament, like this thing called Star City Games, which has, like, you know, they run a lot of tournaments. Anyway, there was a like transgender person that won a tournament for Legacy, playing a really hard to play deck. Like they played really well, but chat was like going in and just being terrible people, obviously. So after that, what happened is every single Magic event disabled chat, not just Star City, but like every single tournament organizer just like stopped using chat ever, like period. It was just off by default and all. So I don't think we want to see that. Like, I don't want to ever. Yeah. But I like Chalky's suggestion. That's like an elegant fix. So maybe that's something that comes of it.
Yeah, definitely be great. Okay, guys. Well, that's going to be it for like our DreamHack talk. And pretty much there's a lot of the segments that we have. So we'll probably be taking some questions here, or we will be taking some questions. So go ahead and tweet those to ValueTownGG. But in the meantime, I just want to give a shout out to just our patrons for ValueTown, just some folks that have been supporting the show for a while. CJ Hines, Shane Sherman, Lucas Capdeville, Jacob Sebastianfeld, Ben GM, Nicholas LaRiviera, Emil, and Matt Balcom. Thanks a lot for that. And for those of you tuning into the podcast too and have left five-star reviews, Lil, Mike Morgan, Arnie, Numero Uno, thanks a lot for that too, because that really, really helps ValueTown just kind of in the audio space. I think a lot of people don't realize that people actually listen to these shows outside of Twitch, and the audio space is actually a really great place to really reach people too. So really important to help us, I guess, help ValueTown in that way too. So really appreciate that, guys. Any questions? Let's see, what questions do we have here? Let's see. Okay, so Antonio, should Twitch employ staff for moderation, or is it entirely up to the tournament organizers for largely viewed broadcasts? So, question about that. What did you think about moderation? I mean, I think they were trying their best. I mean, they can't read people's minds, and people were talking about bots and things like that, but bots are never perfect either, guys. So, I don't know. I mean, moderation is definitely something that needs to be taken seriously, but they were trying their best this weekend, at least I could tell. I don't know. What do you guys think?
When the moderation, though, is like, what do you want them to do? Ban the try-hard emote? Like, because that's what they did for part of the weekend. It's that's literally part of the website. So if that's the point you're getting to with moderation, like, it's a little weird. Like, I understand some things absolutely need to be, like, auto-banned, like, very offensive things. But,
yeah,
like, some are just emotes, like.
Yeah.
I mean, the tryhard emote is, that's definitely debatable for sure. Let's see. There's a question from Volta. I can't even pronounce these. There's the European ones. Hanslick. It's, what do you think about Amnesiacs and Firebat's OTK decks in Star Ladder? Haven't seen them. And he asked, will OTK decks be good again at some point?
It's sort of a cycle. Like, since Control's really hot right now because it's been doing well, not only in DreamHack, but EGLX the week before, Control won.
Right.
And now it's flooding the ladder because there's a lot of people that just look, what won a tournament? It's on Hearthstone. I'm going to play it on ladder. And a really good answer to that's just like killing them in one turn. There's nothing they can do. Forbidden Healing won't do anything if you mind blast them from 30. So it's kind of really smart by them to recognize the pattern, but now it's going to go back to like mid-range and aggro, and the cycle will always continue.
Okay. Any comments?
No, I mean, it's pretty much how it goes, yeah. Okay. OTK decks are there to like prey on Control usually.
Okay.
Awesome.
Julius Carlson asks, what are your thoughts on tournaments not getting views because of players being mostly unknown? Do we need more invites? Okay, interesting. Ray, I know you have, I guess, thoughts just generally with how to get used in tournaments and stuff.
Whenever we have invites, people are complaining it's not open, and whenever it's open, the viewership sucks. So it's like there's always this vocal minority that wants there to be less invites, but just the reality of the situation is the free market.
Oh, I think you're muted. You can't hear you, Ray. You like muted all of a sudden. Uh-oh. I think he can't hear us at all. I think you muted there, Andre. can you not hear us at all? Shoot. You can hear me, right? Chalky, you can hear me, right?
Yeah, yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay. Ray, you back?
Well, I guess Ray? I'll give my opinion.
Ray, are you there? Can you hear me? Oh, okay.
Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah. Something's going on here. Hold on. We're going to have to figure this out. Chalky, why don't you give your thoughts like while we're doing this?
Sure. Yeah, oh, do we have him back?
This is weird. Give me a second. Yeah, you... gosh.
I pretty much agree with what I said, but I do think for tournaments like DreamHack, like, there's enough big names that I don't feel like the viewership sucks. Like, I didn't get a chance to, like, look at numbers for DreamHack and stuff, but the viewership seemed normal to me.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of the best viewed games
at DreamHack. The new thing seems to be you're at an open tournament and you incentivize big names to come. So, like, you'll pay Firebat's way out to the tournament. Like, that's something EGLX did. They invited, like, 4 or 5 players to their tournament. So you pay for Firebat's flight and hotel. He comes to your tournament. Suddenly, you know, now you have a feature match to show. And the whole Swiss plus feature matches thing works really well, I think. And it's important to realize, like, stories like Terrence, J. Billy B., like, Peyton, these players wouldn't be showing up if we did pure invites. And the other thing about pure invites is, it honestly, the tournament winning basically means nothing. Like, if you win a 16-man or an 8-man, it doesn't have the same pull as that you triumphed over 200 people. So I think the kind of opens that DreamHack is doing is really good. Mm-hmm. There has to be a limit. Like, you can't just have thousands of randoms in your tournament, obviously. You have to have names to broadcast, but it doesn't need to be pure invites.
Yeah, agreed. Ray, you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Good old Sky, baby.
Jeez. Yeah, basically all I was going to say is there's always going to be like a mix of both kinds of tournaments, and I think it's just up to the guy that's actually putting up their own money to run the tournament, right? If somebody is investing a bunch of money to make a Hearthstone tournament for you, and it's like OGN or something, and they want to do high production value, and they want to invite some notable players, the community shouldn't, like, give them shit for that. Like, because the viewership's going to be good. People want to watch that event. Like, good on them. You want to do an all-open tournament, put up your own fucking money. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. The tournaments that matter will always have, like, those open spots, like all the BlizzCon stuff, DreamHack, which is cool. That's great. But, yeah. The reality is it's really hard to make a name for yourself in Hearthstone because being good at the game just does not matter. Most of the – I mean, okay, I hate when I say that. I mean, it does matter. Right? It does matter. It's just like even the best players in the world will win like 1 in 20 tournaments that they play in. And a lot of the times that these known players will like win more tournaments happens to be because they can afford to travel to every single event and they just play in 20 times more of them. Right. So it's like hard to really build a name for yourself as a nobody because same reasons in Magic, travel's expensive. Some tournaments are invites, some aren't. So you're just going to inherently like play less often. And, even if you're the best in the world and you can travel to all these things, it's still Hearthstone and Flame Juggler is still in the game and Knife Juggler is still in the game. It's just not. You can play 20 tournaments without making a mistake. You're not going to necessarily win one and make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
That's why it's so hard for new names to come up, I think.
Yeah. The definitely good. All good points there. Just, I guess, as a community generally, it's just good to have at least a little bit of both. But people have got to make some money too, guys. So, like, you know, invites have to happen. Like, those type of tournaments have to happen. And us trying to get some of these newer names too. I think some people made some names for themselves this past weekend too, which was cool. Lots of ladder warriors here might have gotten a little bit more exposure. Definitely good. Okay, last question. Did you guys play the Tavern Brawl?
There's a little bit of it.
There's a lot of discussion of the Tavern Brawl for those that might not have played. It's pick any two cards, and then that's only two cards you get, like the entire 30, you know, like your 30 card deck. Ray, did you play it at all?
Yeah, it's really cool because it teaches you about how metagames evolve. Because it breaks down deck building into like its purest form, which is like two card combinations. Well, like one card decks would be the purest form, but that doesn't let you counter necessarily. So two card decks, like this huge metagame has evolved where there's the variety of aggro decks and mid-range decks, and there's like control decks, and there's just so much variety. But then there's also what I was thinking is like, what if you take it to the next step, right? And you make, because right now there's no clear-cut best deck. There's no two-card deck that beats everything else. Mm-hmm. So what happens if you take it up to three cards?
Right.
Like, how does the metagame evolve then, right? And then it's still like very simple deck building, but it's still a very like rich metagame that just comes out of that. Mm-hmm. And what if you do four cards, five cards, and eventually you work your way up to 30 cards? And at 30 cards, there's actually less playable decks than at two cards.
Right.
So that's why, that's just why I think decks kind of exist along a spectrum. And by there only being two cards in deck building, it means that literally 50% of your deck is different if you want to do a different card. So your entire strategy is completely different.
Yeah.
But in 30 card decks, if you change one card, it's still just on the spectrum of decks, you're still like ramp druid or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like an interesting thought experiment for deck building and how metagames progress. And most people like nobody's like thinking of it that way, but it's it is also like fun to play and cool to think about.
Yeah. What'd y'all use? Everybody's mech war bringing out, right? So is that all you guys used, or did you try anything else?
I'm not sure what the best deck is, but I think Upgrade Bash might be the best.
Upgrade Bash? Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, I just used Ice Blocks and Torches. And
yes.
I didn't run into anything that beat it, but yeah, like, because you beat the Fatigue because of the Torch effect.
Right.
You beat the other Ice Block decks because of the Torch effect. You beat the mechs because of
that's
the Ice
good.
Block.
Yeah.
I think, Warrior with Bashes might just be able to have enough life gain to beat it, but I don't know. It's pretty tough to beat from what I saw.
Yeah, that Bash is, that's interesting. I was thinking of, we were talking earlier, right? I played Trog and Totem Golem. Obviously did the Warper stuff too, but thinking we were talking about the Flare and Quickshot too, but that Bash counters that totally. So I don't know what actually would beat that. Definitely a lot of fun. Hopefully one day we'll have a true custom mode where we can set up whatever kind of games we want, just however many cards of, just not two limits, right, or limited to two cards, and we can maybe even do something like this one day, even as an event. That'd be cool. All right, guys. Well, I'm going to wrap up. Nice hour-long show tonight. Today, we're going to obviously come back next week with Noxious and hopefully we'll see who wins DreamHack this DreamHack France. Actually, there's no DreamHack. Wait, there's no Hearthstone at DreamHack, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
I don't think so.
Maybe the Starlighter folks. But anyways, I want to thank Chalky obviously for coming on. It's been a long time since we had you on Valuetown. Like. Years, yes. Probably.
Yeah, it's only been months. I was on.
Is it months? Like, oh, okay. Yeah, God, I'm thinking
I was on here 2015, like towards the end of Firebatten show.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's not too bad.
For LOE, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. That's true. Well, anyways, again, congratulations, dude, on finally getting that big tournament. And any shout outs you want to do before you take off?
Just shout outs to the guys that, helped me win: Nostum, Muzzy, Flo, Frank, the Rat. That's admirable. My team for sending me out, helping with all that. And yeah, shout outs to everybody that was a fan, is a fan, or has been following since the humble beginnings of just playing online, like eight mans and stuff back in 2013.
Right. Ray?
Shout out to the usual shout outs, man. Good. Thanks for running the show, Chris. I appreciate it. Thanks to Chalky for coming on. Shout out to TempoStrum.com for all of your space pants needs. And we're going to have new merch soon. It's been the same run for so long, but I just fixed it. I hired a merch guy yesterday. So.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, we'll start cranking out lots of new stuff. Mouse pads, someone asked about today. So.
Cool.
But shout out to Jasen. I think he
yes.
got top 16 at the DreamHack.
Like he was using my laptop too, by the way. I would have let you nice. Use it, you know, Ray, if I knew you needed it, but you know.
It's all good, man. too proud to ask. Fuck. But yeah. Nice. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right, cool. And again, I just thank you guys for doing the show with me. Obviously, Tempest Storm for sponsoring Value Town. And all of you guys for watching the show. VODs will be up, youtube.com/KMMV, probably in about an hour. I actually have to go do something right after the show. Usually I get these babies up right after. So an hour, check there. Audios will be up later on tonight on iTunes and Google Podcasts and all your favorite aggregators, yeah, podcast aggregators. And that's going to be it, guys. So for Chalky, Raynette, and KMMV, I'll see you, or we'll see you next week. Later.